engineering a new response, and we've discussed extensively at this convention our disappointment with the initial government announcement about the at-home COVID testing program. But from January 3 forward, from the beginning, we have been very clear with the administration of all the tools that we have to compel the government to get it right. We want to be a partner. We want to help get this right for all at-home testing in the future. And when we did get the attention of the government, our experience has been, especially with the leadership at the National Institutes of Health, they've said, you know what? We did this quickly. We didn't get it right on accessibility, but we are going to nail this going forward. And here's what I want to say about that. You may not realize that at-home COVID testing is changing the nature of at-home testing forever. In the month of February alone, more Americans took at-home COVID tests in that month than took at-home pregnancy tests in all of 2021. That means this is a big opportunity to innovate. And I think we should really be focused on the fact that the government, and especially the leadership at NIH, has rallied to our call for equal access. And not only that, they have called on us, the National Federation of the Blind, to be a trusted expert in helping them get it right. And so I'm really excited to have with us at this convention the Deputy Director of the National Institutes of Health, Biomedical Imaging and Bioengineering Program. I talked about it extensively in our presidential report. Please welcome Dr. Jill Heemskerk.
I'm really wondering what to make of that intro music. You guys are a hoot. Thank you for that nice introduction, and good afternoon, everybody. I am Jill Heemskerk, Deputy Director of, we'll say, NIBIB. You heard the full name, and it's a mouthful, but really what we are is the Engineering Institute at the National Institutes of Health. The NIH is one of the largest, is actually the largest funder of biomedical research in the world, and funds most of the research done at universities, small businesses, and research institutions in this country. It's actually made up of 27 different institutes and centers, and you know at least one because Dr. Tony Fauci runs the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease. That's one of the biggest NIH institutes. Engineering is a smaller one, but we're mighty. We're small but mighty. And when the pandemic started, Congress gave the NIH a lot of money to develop new vaccines, new treatments, and new tests for COVID. The Engineering Institute, our institute, NIBIB, was charged with developing COVID tests, which is a perfect role for the engineering community. And you'll remember at the beginning of the pandemic how very hard it was to get a COVID test, and then once you got your test, how long it took to get the results back. Yeah, you that's right, you couldn't even get them. I'm going to tell you today about a program we started called RADx, and RADx stands for Rapid Acceleration of Diagnostics. And we've been tremendously successful in delivering about half of the diagnostics that are performed in the country now, not only in laboratories, but also at the point of care in doctor's offices and clinics, and the home tests that we all are so grateful to have. But really the big story today is our partnership with NFB to make home tests more accessible for people with blindness and low vision. So as we just heard, when the government started distributing free tests to people in the country early this year, NFB and other advocacy groups quickly did some very important and very effective outreach to the government. And they pointed out that while it's great to have tests in the country, the tests that we have are not accessible to people with blindness and low vision and other disabilities. And We completely agree and recognize that everybody needs tests that can be taken easily, independently, and confidentially. And so I'm going to tell you today about RADx's effort to make accessible tests a reality. I'm going to first, though, describe the RADx program because it's unique and it's quite a powerful process for accelerating research and development. NIBIB received funding from Congress for COVID tests because we already had a network in place since 2007 that was developing point-of-care tests and home tests for lots of different diseases and conditions. We quickly expanded that network in April of 2020 to focus on COVID test development. We had four academic centers at the time and a coordinating center called CIMMET at Mass General Hospital. And what we did was we established new core resources to validate tests, conduct clinical studies that the FDA needs for authorization, and we set up one resource that is truly unique at NIH called the Deployment Core at CIMMET, which has all of the expertise in-house to get tests from the idea stage all the way out to the market. And what we did is provide much more than funding to these manufacturers. We provided this wraparound support to the companies developing tests that managed issues around supply chain, manufacturing, FDA authorization. We helped them solve every problem in getting an entirely new kind of test to the marketplace. And the experts in the Deployment Corps spent the last 2 years working with over 900 experts from multiple sectors to create an entirely new ecosystem of at-home and point-of-care tests in the U.S. We started with a broad call for technology solutions as soon as we got the money in April. And this really galvanized the engineering community. We were amazed that we attracted 824 separate proposals for tests. From companies and academic institutions. And to deal with this onslaught of applications and proposals, we set up a fast-moving pipeline to evaluate the tests and figure out which were the most important ones to support. We developed a unique process for NIH that almost resembles a venture capital approach. We started off with a viability assessment, and then proposals that looked promising entered what we were calling the Shark Tank phase, where a team of experts worked closely with the companies over 1 or 2 weeks to look at all their data and their capabilities, and we examined all the aspects of the technology, the technical, the clinical, the regulatory, and the plans for manufacturing. And so we had a very good sense of which of these test proposals were the most promising. And we moved those into phase one, which was sort of a de-risking. Try to make the test, try to validate the test. We helped with that. And those that were successful moved to phase two, where there was a very large-scale investment to get the clinical studies done for the FDA and to scale up the tests for the marketplace. And this novel hands-on process has proved to be tremendously successful, and we actually reduced what is typically a 6-month test development timeline down to as little as 6 months. So what have we accomplished so far? We have delivered 2.6 billion tests to the United States. That's billion with a B. For comparison, last year in the U.S., there were 9,000 pregnancy tests taken. So that is just a completely different scale. These tests include not only laboratory, but point of care and home tests, and represent about half of the tests that are available in the U.S. now. We have supported tests all the way to FDA authorization. We have 44 FDA authorizations under our belt, including 10 for at-home tests. And we've got more on the way. In this process, we've worked with more than 100 manufacturers, and we're relying on our relationships with these companies to help in our now effort to develop more accessible tests for people with blindness and disabilities. We are still actively working in developing new tests and continuing with this successful pipeline. Central to this meeting, of course, is developing tests that can be used independently by people with blindness and low vision. But we plan now that accessibility will be built into all of our development efforts, including efforts to develop at-home tests that are as reliable as lab tests. We also would like to broaden our efforts to other diseases, for example, respiratory infections like flu and RSV. And we'd like to spur innovation in the cost drivers for tests and get tests to the market that are not only accessible, but cost as little as $5 a test. So, thank you. And it's funny to look back at the start of this project. I thought if we could just have a COVID test that was like a pregnancy test, that would be great. We'd be done. And then we get to that point and we realize, oh, they're not accessible. They're not affordable. They're not very sensitive. So there's still a lot to be done. And that is where the partnership with NFB comes in. Once the NFB and other groups reached out to the government about the importance of accessible tests, the first thing we did in RADx was to organize a listening session. Actually, that was the second thing we did. The first thing we did was regret that we had not had accessibility built in at the outset. We set up a listening session so that we could talk to the users and understand the challenges in the accessibility of at-home tests. We invited advocates from the disability community, the aging community, and the blind and low vision communities. The important, beyond just listening, the important goal here was to set up relationships that we could so that we could integrate these users into what we knew was going to be an ongoing process to develop tests. We did not want to have a single engagement and then go from there. We wanted to have active partners, and I have to say that NFB has been incredibly generous with their time and education and resources. We also invited the six of the federal agencies that have accessibility as part of their mission, including multiple institutes from NIH, the CDC, FDA, the Administration for Community Living, the National Council on Disability, and the U.S. Access Board. And we had at this meeting three breakout sessions, one blind and low vision, one fine motor impairment, and one for older adults. And it was incredibly revealing for us to hear about things that we had not even considered, incredibly valuable. And one thing that we did notice was that these groups, in their separate breakout groups, often came up with the same challenges regardless of what the challenge was, and they were actually challenges that we all have with these tests. The instructions was a big one. Small print, complicated, few language options, no Braille at all, and often no simple step-by-step instructions. The boxes were difficult because there's no scannable identifiers, so you have a box and you don't know what's in it. You don't know what instructions to look for. The test procedure itself is challenging to truly almost everybody. There are too many steps in these processes. The need to count drops of fluid and aim into a tiny hole on the device. Multiple little small parts in the box. And instructions that say things like, put the drops in the top hole. Well, if you don't know which end of the device is up, you don't know what's the top hole and what's the bottom hole. And I think especially vexing for people with blindness, the repeated instruction not to touch this and not to touch that is just not helpful at all. And then also key for people with blindness is that the result appears often as a little faint line on a strip. There's no simple interpretation that says your test is positive or your test is negative. And although some of the tests work with smartphones, they're not accessible to many people. We learned that as many as 40% of these communities don't have access to cell phones. So we are taking a two-pronged approach here. One prong is the fastest approach, which is to modify existing tests. And the other prong is the best approach, which is a longer-term plan to design accessible tests with accessibility built into the design from the very beginning, which clearly is the preferred approach. We'll be announcing a solicitation for proposals in just a matter of just a few weeks. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about our process for test modification, which we're very engaged and excited about. Illume is a good example of a reasonably accessible test, and that was noted by the NFB in their own accessibility evaluation. In the government, I want to make sure I tell you, the government on covidtest.gov is now making Illume tests available for free to people with blindness and low vision. But even Illume, if you've taken it, has room for improvement. And those improvements is what we want to bring to bear. So our process is a multi-step pipeline where we start with an accessibility evaluation, and then, based on the challenges observed for the particular test, design a prototype. And on the advice of NFB, some of our designers are people with blindness and people with low vision. So it's getting advice from the experts is always the best idea.
Yeah.
Once we have a prototype designed, we'll move into a user feedback phase. And the users, again, we want to put these in the hands of people with blindness and low vision for them to tell us, did we get it right? And what we plan to do, this is a very high-touch process with lots of user involvement. We're going to go through that process twice. Tests that have gone into the user feedback stage already, we've heard, no, that's not quite what we want. So what we're thinking is that we're going to start with a sort of early prototype, go back to the design stage with the feedback, and then produce a more mature prototype and get feedback again. And we'll do that as many times as we need to get something that is acceptable to the community. And then once we have an agreed upon product, we'll support the companies to start producing those. We identified 24 different tests for this initial evaluation, and 12 look very amenable to modification, and they've moved on into this prototype design phase. And our goal is to have more accessible tests being produced as early as this fall. We've had a lot of good news in this process already. The first piece of good news we got was that as we reach out to the companies making these tests and tell them what we're doing, they've been saying, that's great. Do this as quickly as possible. We're developing tests for other things. We want to know how to make them accessible. So they're very eager for the feedback and very, very eager for to start producing more accessible tests. They see a huge benefit in this. We even had a company start making modifications before we got all the user feedback in, and we had to tell them to slow down. They were so eager. The other very gratifying news is that we have always collaborated closely with the FDA on our RADx program, and they are also very excited about this and prepared to advise and accelerate the process. Any changes we make to the tests are going to have to go through FDA review, and they're going to need data that tells them that the changes made don't do anything to make the test unsuccessful. So even something as simple as changing the instructions is going to take probably 3 months before there's a new product on the shelves. There are two other elements of the accessibility initiative that I wanted to mention. One is really focused on the instructions, because two-thirds of our recommendations from the accessibility review have been about the instructions. So we've set up a separate fast-track process that can benefit all of the marketed tests. We'd like to develop a general format that all companies can use that is simplified, has larger type, has a new layout, and we will make this available so that any company, whether they're working with us or not, as they're developing their instructions, can use this template. And for web accessible instructions, we are addressing packaging for rapid access to the relevant instructions, such as QR codes. And I was really interested to hear what Kellogg has. That you could do that from 4 feet away is brilliant. The FDA is poised to help, as I said, and they will review new instructions after all the users have agreed that the instructions are now actually helpful. The other effort that we're doing is a best practices effort, because what we'd like is for the work that we're doing to benefit all test manufacturing. As now home tests are commonplace because of COVID, there are going to be home tests for other conditions and disorders, glucose tests, pregnancy tests, flu tests, other diseases. And we want there to be a set of best practice guidelines available to the manufacturers so that they can develop them with accessibility in mind from the outset. So in conclusion, everybody at RADx is really excited about this initiative. We recognize that accessibility improvements will benefit everybody, and we're very grateful to the NFB for their role in not only stimulating this work, but for their ongoing support and advice as we work together to create accessible COVID tests. Thank you very much.